Fitheads. Welcome to another episode of Sharing Our Pairings. This is Sharing Our Pairings episode 89. Spotlight on Recluse 2.0. I'm your host, John the Cigar Surgeon. Sharing Our Pairings is brought to you by Gurkha Cigars. Go down to your local B&M, check out the new Heritage, or check out the new Heritage Maduro. Yeah. We're broadcast live around the world, picked up on the Armed Forces Radio Network, and of course, every podcast app in the world. And you know that because you're listening to us right now, either live or on podcast or through CigarFederation.com. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, the local Californian, the master of beer, Robbie Rass. What's going on, brother?
I don't know about the master of beer, but thank you. Things are good, man. It's the calm between storms here in sunny Bay Area today. We've got
literally.
Yeah, we've got a pretty good storm coming in tomorrow, from what I understand. So I'm glad that we're doing this show today and it's sunny out. Got some nice beers here to sip on and a little bit of the Scotch whiskey.
Four beers?
No, just two. Just two beers today. Yeah, going with a couple that I haven't had before, so that's exciting. We've got a nice cigar, and yeah, things are good, man. Things are good.
Given the number of beers we've paired on the show, and it's been a lot. I'm not kidding. It's been a lot of beers. I'm shocked that the two beers that I've chosen tonight weren't featured. I was sure in my mind that they were featured, but I went looking on YouTube. Did a quick search for the keyword, and neither beer has been on the show before. So that's good. It's fresh. It's exciting.
Yeah, it's almost impossible for me to have anything that I have in the house. Like, this guy's full of beer. This guy's full of beer down here. And chances are we've had all that stuff on the show. Unless
guaranteed.
It's a sour or a Goza or something like that. I mean, those, and I've got several of those in there. It's those that haven't been on the show. Or anything that's barrel aged for the most part, because I've kind of decided that pairing anything barrel aged is probably not the best way to go about things. It's just too
problematic.
Yeah, exactly. So, going with a Pilsner today and a hoppy dank amber. So it's going to be interesting with this Amadeus Connecticut Lancero.
Say what?
Recluse. Yeah, these. And I mean, the last one we did was Habano. The Habano was great.
It was legit.
Just got off to the start here with this one, as you can see. I mean, the burns.
I think we're about the same
nice so far.
Point.
Twinsies.
I mean, we know it's going to be good because we've smoked a bunch of Recluse stuff. Thanks very much, Scott. Scott Weeks from Recluse for hooking us up pre August 8th. And this is a Connecticut shade. So we're going in a bit of a different direction. You know, we do a lot of Habanos. We do some Corojos. We do some Maduros. But we don't really do a lot of Connecticuts. I bet we could probably count on one hand, maybe even two fingers, how many Connecticut pairings we've done in the show over the many years we've been doing the show now. A little bit about the Recluse Amadeus Connecticut shade, Lancero. That's the key word there, Lancero. They ferment their cigars for 2 years, which is awesome. 100% N2 bar. Sounds much cooler when Scott says it. Uses that classic Ecuadorian Connecticut shade, grade A wrapper. And then the binder is it's a secret. It's a proprietary binder they call MBC. Now, I know Scott explained that on a previous show, so if you want to check that out, go to Cigar Chat. Scott's a lot of fun to listen to. He throws around a lot of colorful colloquialisms, and they will keep you very entertained. And then lastly, the fillers are Dominican with just a little bit of U.S. broadleaf, Pennsylvania broadleaf in there to give it a little oomph.
Yeah, it's definitely got a little kick to it. It started out pretty spicy.
For Connecticut, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I was surprised. My video here is a little bit choppy. Am I choppy to you?
A little bit.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know what else to do. I'm hardwired, but
whatevs.
Whatever. We'll go with it. But yeah, it's got a little bit of a kick to it. It's got a little extra body, I think, that you don't necessarily expect or traditionally expect
from say, a but, classic Connecticut?
Yeah, traditionally expect from a classic Connecticut. But this is that new style Connecticut that's been coming out for the last several years now. And I mean, even this cigar has been around for a few years. And I know it's the first time we featured it. And man, when you said Connecticut shade that we've paired with, and I'm trying to think,
yeah,
have we done another one?
So
pops to mind.
Yeah, so I think we've done two. One was specifically a whiskey blended cigar, and the other one was the Drew Estate series. Because the first cigar in the the beer lineup was Connecticut Shade.
The Smoking Monk.
Yeah, but I don't think it was the first one we did, because I feel like the first one we might have done was either the Porter or the Stout, and the Smoking Monk Connecticut was like the second or third show, but it actually ended up being good. So for all my kind of aversions to doing Connecticut pairings, both pairings were good.
Did we do Underground Shade?
We have not done Underground Shade, and I feel like that's kind of a shame, because I'm pretty sure I got a couple of those kicking around.
Yeah, and the Connecticut Forte, we didn't do that either?
Wow, I don't think we did, which is, you know, to this date, probably still one of my favorite. That's from Fred Rui at Nomad Cigars.
Correct.
Yeah, probably still one of my favorite Connecticuts, mostly because it's, you know, and I have to give props to Fred, because a lot of people have kind of coined this phrase. We heard it a lot at the IPCPR. Oh, this isn't your father's Connecticut. Well, you know who coined that phrase? Fred did, with Connecticut Forte, like a year before. In fact, almost exactly a year before Connecticut's kind of became en vogue back in the, you know, beyond the people that are normally producing it. I mean, the new wave of Connecticut's. Fred really coined that.
Yeah, he started the trend, if you will. And, I mean, someone will say, oh, well, this guy did it first. Well, there's always somebody who did it first. But I think that was the first, at least in our cigar circles and online cigar media, that one of the first Connecticuts that really kind of jumped up and got people's attention. It's right up there as one of my favorites as well. The Quesada 40th Corona Classica, that's still my favorite. That's still my favorite. And I actually smoked the Gurkha, what the hell one was it? The Gurkha Grand Reserve or Special Reserve 21 year.
Is that got an Ecuadorian?
Yeah. That's
really?
Yeah. Well, it's a Connecticut Shade. I don't know if it's Ecuadorian. I don't know if it's Ecuadorian or not. I think it is. And that was actually really good. It was, it's funny, and you read the wrapper, it's like they've got a lot of information on the band, I should say, not the wrapper. They've got a lot of information on the band, and it says blend strength, and it said 88.5. And that cigar was mild plus, tops. It wasn't an 88.5. But maybe if you're used to just smoking, you know, really, really mild stuff, that's going to be a little bit more on the high end. But it actually had a lot of nice flavors and really nice sweetness in the finish. So there's some good ones out there.
Well, and as Logan says, I don't know if he complains about it, but he certainly repeats that, you know, the big thing in the industry, as everyone says, Connecticut Shade is the biggest segment of the premium handmade cigar markets that are not infused. It's hard to see that, because obviously I'm influenced by my own biases. I'm not really one to sort of wake and bake, as they say, with Connecticut Shade. I do like a good Connecticut Shade, but for me, I'm going to just throw myself under the bus here. For my palate, most Connecticut blends just lack the complexity I'm looking for. There's nothing wrong with them. It's just, it's a good cigar, but it's like, you know, it's like it doesn't blow my skirt up, versus, you know, the new wave of Connecticut's like this Recluse Amadeus, which, as you say, it's got a lot more oomph, it's got a lot more body, it's got a lot more going on right out of the gate than just a standard typical Connecticut. And that, for me, for my palate, that's what I'm looking for.
The hard part about that, though, from a blending standpoint, is that balance of getting that extra oomph, as you say, and some extra spice and things of that nature. Structure and balance and that kind of stuff, but still get some flavor from the wrapper. So if you overdo it on your binders and your fillers, and you're just going to blow out that wrapper, and you may as well just do something else. So I think that's the balancing act.
Yeah, James Brown of Black Label Trading Company talked about that on the Cigar Chat last week. He mentioned that one of the toughest things he had to do was move out of his comfort zone. I've heard that story actually repeated from a lot of companies who are kind of known for blending in the medium full to full category, where a client comes along and it challenges them with a Connecticut Shade, and they go, like, I don't know how to blend this, man. This is just totally out. But, you know, I think for them, and certainly for us, it's a lot of fun, because part of that learning process is you learn, like you said, how to blend filler and binder that's not going to overrun the wrapper and kind of make that wrapper pointless in the cigar. And the end result tends to be pretty good, because I think, you know, it's that struggle that makes an interesting product in the end.
Speaking of, you touched on both of them when you were talking about James from Black Label and the Connecticut Broadleaf, or not Connecticut Broadleaf, it's very different, the Connecticut Shade wrapper, the Sigfed blend in the Throwdown, which is produced at the Black Label Trading Company's factory, whose name is escaping me. The Sig Fed Black Grant,
La Fabrica Oveja Negra.
Yeah, that. So hot right now.
So hot.
But yeah, the Throwdown, the Sig Fed version of the Throwdown has a Connecticut wrapper on it, so it's just kind of interesting. I think they still have some of those.
The Throwdown project, is that going on right now? How would one find out more about that, Robbie?
I just go to the Sig Fed store. It's right there on the front page. It's basically there's a Cigar Federation blend and there's a Reddit Cigars blend, and they're facing off, quote unquote, against each other. Comes in a 10-pack. They're all Lanceros, so it's very fitting to the show. And you get five of each blend. Five Cigar Federation blends, five Reddit blends. Then there's going to be a voting thing, and I don't know if there's like a trophy or what, of whoever wins, but something like that. But you check out the Cigar Federation store, and they still have some available, it looks like. So not too many, but a handful of 10-packs are still available, so check that out.
Buy now, suckas. And just a reminder to all the Reddit people for their blend, Cigar Federation is undefeated in Showdown competitions so far. Just throwing it out there. Now, I had to check my emails, but I'm pretty sure that neither you nor I was consulted on the blending process for the Cigar Federation blend. I just throwing it out there.
That is correct. I was not consulted or involved in any way, shape, or form. And I'm not taking it personally. I don't know if you were asked to be involved and you just maybe went to your junk mail or something, but I have confirmation that I was not involved.
Logan does not care what Canadians think at all.
Copy that.
So let's get to it, because this show is all about pairing, which means we're pairing a cigar with beverages. In this case, I'm going beer, spirit, beer, just to keep things loose. And first up, I've got one of my favorites. It's kind of not really the weather for it, but it's delicious. It's La Divine Comédie from La Tru de Diable, another great Quebec brewery. And what's interesting about this is this is a cooperative, collaborative, beer with Du Ciel, which of course we featured a number of times on the show, or at least I have. Love the brewery, and I really like what comes out of La Tru de Diable. It's, you know, sort of a very Quebec style where it's interesting, you know, and I think it in my mind it kind of fit the theme, where this isn't just a regular wit pils style beer. It's plus, you know what I mean? Like a normal pilsner doesn't really do it for me. A lot of people really like pilsners. It's kind of boring for me. Same thing with Connecticut Shade. So I thought, well, that's a great choice to go with this cigar. The strength level should be kind of similar. La Tru de Diable, I mentioned, was out of Quebec, Canada. Located in Shawinigan, Quebec. You would know where Shawinigan is if you were a Canadian, because that's where one of our previous prime ministers was from. And they opened their brewery in 2005, and the name is a reference. La Tru de Diable is a reference to this devil whirlpool at the bottom of Shawinigan Falls. They say once you go in, you never come out. No one's found the bottom. La Divine Comédie, 5.4% ABV, which is actually kind of high for a pils. I kind of would have expected to be around the 4.95 mark. They say it's got a malty nose with fruit accents, with passion fruit and mangoes. Oh yeah, super mango-y actually. Like, not if you put your nose right into a mango, or even like a honeydew melon or something like that, but not right into the melon, not that overpowering fruit, but like sort of if you kind of walk into a room and you know someone's been cutting a melon, it's kind of that. That's really interesting. I've never gotten that off of a pill, so color me interested. What do you got on deck for number one?
Sorry, the dogs are freaking out in the background.
Calm down, dogs. We're just drinking. Relax.
Just chill out. Anyway, I went with something totally new. I knew nothing about this brewery. I picked it up just totally on a whim because I was attracted to the can. And it's from Sufferfest Brewing, or Sufferfest Beer Company. And it's their Epic Pils, Epic Pilsner. And it's 5.1 ABV. All their beers are gluten-free, and I'll get into that in a second. This is brewed and canned in San Francisco, California. They're established in 2015, so very, very new. They only have, according to their website, they only have two beers available, and I happen to pick up both of them. They have the Pilsner, and they have an IPA. It's an interesting story behind them. Again, sufferfestbeer.com is their website. They were started in late 2015 by Caitlin Landisberg. And it's all woman run. It's all female run.
Interesting.
And they're all athletes, and this is kind of how I don't know, this is kind of the angle that they take here. In 2012, Caitlin Fatt discovered that she was gluten intolerant. So, and her quest to find gluten-free beer in the world turned out she came up a little bit short. So she decided, you know what, I'm going to make my own. And I'm not exactly sure how they do it. They don't get too much into the process. But their tagline is, we're athletes with gluten issues who love beer. That's kind of cool. I was drawn by the artwork.
It's very clean.
I'm a very visual guy. Clean look to me. I really like it. Like the colors, the fonts that are used are very bold. Everything about this look really caught my attention. And at my local spot, you can just pick up one can at a time. So I grabbed a can of this and a can of their IPA. Because, again, I was looking for a Pilsner to pair with this cigar specifically. So a little bit more information on this. It's a little bit different than your average Pilsner, though. The way they describe it here on their website. Again, ABV is 5.1%. The 30 IBUs. And the gluten is less than 10 parts per million. So I don't have gluten issues, at least that I know of. I guess if I had them, I'd know. So I don't know what less than 10 parts per million. I guess that
seems really,
really
low.
Yeah, it seems like a really small number. Anyway, it says our epic pills is big, bright, and especially satisfying on a hot day or after a good sweat. They focus a lot on exercising and things of that nature. I don't really do any of that, so. I mean, for me, it's a good day for it, though, because the sun's out. It's actually a little bit warm.
Sun's out, guns out.
Yeah, exactly. It says, with farmhouse-style notes, a touch of caramel and a hint of spice, the Epic's Saz hops bring a zesty start, followed by a rich grain flavor to finish like winter. Now, when they say that farmhouse kind of flavor, that's that Saison-y kind of Belgian yeasty flavor, and you really get it on the nose. It's kind of overpowering. The nose has got that. It's got that, not overpowering, but you don't expect it from a Pilsner, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's strong nose, a lot of spice from that from those Saz hops. Take a sip. And you definitely get that farmhousey flavor. It's actually really, really nice. It's very delicate on the palate.
And just to step in, I noticed in the color there, it's a lot hazier than what I would expect out of a normal Pils.
Yeah, it's definitely got some haze to it, that's for sure. But it's got a pretty solid white head on there.
Mm-hmm.
Real nice flavor. It's got kind of a fruity characteristic to it. Like I said, it's got that spice right up front. It's very crisp. Doesn't linger too long on the palate. It's actually a really good beer. Again, like you said, I'm not really attracted to Pilsners. I don't track them down. I don't go after Pilsners. But I mean, most people really don't. There's not Pilsner hoarders out there. Maybe there are. I don't know. But I'm actually really impressed with this beer. And, I mean, the fact that it's gluten-free is only a plus. I think it's – yeah. I mean, that's a good thing. It's not a selling point for me, but it can be a selling point for other folks. Like I said, I had no idea that that was the case when I bought it. I was just looking for a Pilsner, and I was attracted to the can. The flavors on it are really nice. There's a lot more flavor than you expect from a Pilsner, a lot more depth of flavor. And yet it's still light. And would be very refreshing on a nice hot day. It's a little bit warm. I wouldn't call it hot today, but definitely nice beer. And we'll see how the pairing goes here in a minute. I'm curious to see what's going on with yours.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about that in just a minute. After I remind our audience, you're tuned into Sharing Our Pairings, episode 89, Spotlight on Recluse 2.0. I'm your host, John the Cigar Surgeon, brought to you by CigarFederation.com and sponsored by Gurkha. Gurkha, check out your local B&M. Ask them what they got for Gurkha. I guarantee they've got something that's right for you. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Robbie Rass. We are broadcast around the world on the Armed Forces Radio Network. And not to get political or anything, but I've heard that the FDA ruling has been confirmed, that unfortunately the lovely people in the Armed Forces who keep us safe will not be getting direct donations of cigars as per the FDA. So boo on you. I'm sure that is going to be overturned because there's going to be some heat brought on them. But back to pairing, which is what we're here to talk about.
No, wait. I saw that story was broke. I saw that Coop, Cigar Coop, they confirmed it over there.
Stogie Geeks, yep. Will Coop.
Now, does that – have you read into it? I haven't read it.
I just read the because I was pretty busy today. I just read the excerpt, and essentially the excerpt said, "No, the language in there was intended to stop donations of any kind. That does include donations to the military." Now, my understanding is the loophole is that you could donate money or other resources, just not cigars, which, you know, again, in the political climate in the United States, if you're doing that to the military, that's not going to look good. And I suspect that, like I said, if the pressure is going to come from anywhere, as soon as the that story gets a few rotations in the papers, people will be screaming bloody murder, I suspect.
Now, is that for cigar companies or just for the average person?
That applies to cigar companies.
Okay, so...
So you as an individual could still donate.
I could still donate to Cigars for Warriors or something to that effect.
Because you're not restricted by the FDA as a at least not yet.
Okay. So they could say, well, we want to donate... We're going to donate $10,000 worth of cigars to you, so we'll just give you $10,000 and can go buy $10,000 from the cigars.
Exactly. But obviously I think the donations are a lot easier when you're talking about coming directly from a cigar manufacturer. And
of course. You know,
cigar manufacturers out there have been very generous with their donations, supporting the troops. I mean, we see pictures of it on, if you're not a member of, or you haven't visited Cigar for Warriors, you should definitely do that Cigar for Warriors project and support that. Of course, if you aren't already a member of the Cigar Rights of America, CRA, you should absolutely do that. Join up today and support the fight against the FDA. But we'll talk more about that in the After Dark, because I want to talk about my beer. It's good. It's interesting. I mean, it's not what I'd at all describe as a wit, because for me, a lot of wits are very flat. And I think wits have really caught on a lot for a lot of women who don't like beer. But I see a lot of women who don't like beer, they'll drink a wit style beer because it's not offensive. It's not that, it's not got that sort of what people normally associate with a beer quality, like a lager or a wheat ale. They don't like that taste. This is not like a wit at all. It's more like a pilsner. In fact, so much so that it's even got some hoppy astringency on the finish. But I think what I like about it is that it is the right strength and balance for the cigar, because the cigar is nuanced. I mean, it does have a lot more body than a typical classic Connecticut shade blend, but it's still not going to stand up to something like a porter, you know, a really heavy ale. It's not going to stand up to that. It's going to be blown out. So the balance here is great. The fruity accents, the fruity notes in this beer are also really good. It's kind of bringing a little bit of powdered cocoa out of the retro, and it's really subtle. It's really light, but it just brings more to the cigar experience. So far, so good. I'm definitely going to take some more sips here and sort of let the palate of this beer settle in a bit. But so far, so good. I'm happy with this.
Yeah, I think we're kind of along the same path here. I think our beers are a little bit different, but... with this epic pilsner from Sufferfest, and actually I looked up to find out what a Sufferfest is, because Sufferfest sounds horrible,
terrible.
It sounds like a festival of suffering to me. That's
no thanks.
According to UrbanDictionary.com, I mean, it kind of is a Sufferfest. They give a couple of definitions here. One is a workout or a race in the arena of endurance sports that involves prolonged suffering on the part of all who participate. So you sign up to suffer. So like an Ironman competition or something like that. My brother-in-law does these things, and he just signed up for another one, and he's very excited about it. But I would think that would fall into that category, or those tough mudders where, you know, you're running through the mud and you got to climb over a thing, and then you got to, you know, do whatever the hell, and things are trying to electrocute you and stuff like that. I think that would qualify. And then number two definition here is it's a pseudonym for a group ride in cycling that is unusually arduous. And arduous is a good word.
It's a great word.
Yeah, so it's, you know, let's take a 40-mile bike ride uphill both ways and call it good. So, yeah, that's Sufferfest. Anyway, to get back to the actual beer, it's very pleasant. It's got that saison-y farmhouse kind of flavor. When I think farmhouse, I think a farmhouse has got a little bit more tartness to it, mm-hmm. in my head. It's got a little bit more fruity. The beer on its own did have some fruit to it. Did have some fruit to it. With the cigar, it's definitely, the fruit is coming out a lot more. It's almost like an apricot kind of fruit. Apricot, peach, kind of a orange flesh fruit type situation. A little bit of citrus notes in there as well. Then that kind of... that Pilsner malt finish. And it's, like I said, the finish is really crisp. It's bringing out a lot of sweetness in the Amadeus Connecticut that I wasn't getting before. A lot of sweetness on the finish. So I get that spice up front that kind of separates the two flavors, and I get that that sweetness on the finish of the cigar as well. And that spiciness up front on the beer is chased by that fruitiness finished with the malt. It's actually, the pairing is kind of lights out. I mean, this is a really good springtime pairing.
Yeah,
for November or wherever we are, October.
I think the only downside to starting out this strong is, you know, you either stay flat for the rest of the two pairings or you just go downhill from there. So I'm hoping, because I have kind of gone in a different direction with pairing number two. And as much as I want to sit here and drink this Le Tour de Diable Wit, which I do, the Levine Comedy is really good. It's whiskey time. The weather kind of calls for it. And I'm going something completely different tonight. And I'm pretty sure I have not featured, maybe I've featured their shared expression. This is Amaret. And their shared expression is fantastic, by the way. Just a sherry bomb. But this is a different direction. This is Amaret. They are, in fact, an Indian single malt whiskey. Now, you know, people might be off-put by the fact that India is making single malt, but let me tell you, it is excellent. They have a variety of expressions from something that's very soft and delicate, maybe along the lines of a Glenfarclas, if you've ever had a Glenfarclas, all the way up to peated expressions and everything in between. And, of course, we've had the I think it's the intermediate sherry, which is just a mad dog sherry bomb, and it's outstanding. It's a really great product. There's no weirdness to the flavor. I mean, it's a classic, well-produced single malt. And at the end of the day, I don't really care where it comes from. I have no bias on that, and I don't care how old it is. I drink it because it tastes good. And the price on this bottle was actually quite good. I think it was like $53, $54. So very, very good. A little bit about Amaret. I've talked about them in the past, but a long time ago. So they've been making liquor since 1948 in India. And, of course, like a lot of liquor companies, most of their money and the bread and butter is not in whiskey. It's in gin and rum and vodka and other spirits like that. The whiskey brand really didn't launch until 2004. And then they became sort of a big hit, famous, when they got featured in the Whiskey Bible in 2005 and then again in 2010. So, you know, they went from sort of being a new startup on the map. And, you know, the good thing about the Whiskey Bible is it brings some smaller brands like that to international attention. Sometimes that's good, but sometimes that's bad in the case of the Yamazaki, which you can't get really anymore. Thanks, Jim Murray. Appreciate it. Way to ruin it for the rest of us. At any rate, it's got that nice sort of straw, almost, you know, it's like almost a clear color, straw color. It's nice. I'm pretty sure that it is uncolored, which is nice. 46%, and they say it noses of licorice, sort of bourbony quality with vanilla, burnt honeycomb, and toffee. So, oh yeah, and absolutely, there's no question when you nose this. This is one of, like, you immediately get that nice bourbon quality with the vanilla and the sort of toasted oak. I mean, it's, and a little bit of maybe some little bit of spices underneath that. Like, trying to think of an appropriate spice. It's so tough sometimes with whiskey to, because there's such a variety of flavors to put your nose on it, put your finger on it, put your nose on it. But I'm going to have to take some sips here because it smells fantastic. As you can see, I bought this bottle when I was on the road for like 3 weeks. 3 weeks opening stores. So I've done some damage.
Rough few weeks, huh?
It's been a rough few weeks. The stores are open. I'm happy. But Robbie, why don't you talk about your second pairing tonight?
Yeah, I will jump in. I'm going whiskey as well. I'm going with something from the Highlands of Scotland.
Oh, boy.
From Tomaten.
If it's not Scottish, it's crap.
It's from the district. They're in the Central Highlands. Now, do we ever really talk about the districts of the Highlands? Have we done that before?
Hell no. It's so very complicated. Okay. Scotland is a very small and very large place.
Interesting. Yeah, well, these are the Central Highlands, so that's good. So it's a Tomaten 1993, and this was for the Canadian market. This was specifically for Willow Park Wines and Spirits. So guess where I got this?
Was it a true? Oh my God! Look at how bright that is. I've forgotten how. Like, look at that.
It's a beauty. It looks a little bit darker than it is in real life. But it's definitely got the reddish hue to it.
Well, it's pretty dark, and part of the reason it's really dark is cask strength, baby.
Absolutely. I'll get to that. So this is it's a single cask. It was vintage 1993. It was bottled in 2013. So for those of you keeping score at home, that's 20 years in the cask. It was the cask type was, you guessed it, Oloroso Sherry Butt, baby.
Oh, woo-woo. Yeah, whoop.
And there is no doubting that this is a sherry bomb. Wow. I mean, there that spice. This is a heater, too, because you mentioned this is cask strength. So this is 60.4% ABV. That will knock you on thine tuchus.
Yep.
If you get after it too much. A little bit about Tomaten, and I'm just getting this all from the label of the bottle here. They were established in 1897, and that's all I got. But we've had Tomaten. We've featured Tomaten on the show before.
Many times.
I know that Tomaten's one of your favorites. And again, this one is all courtesy of John, and it smells very spicy, very sherry forward, and it smells like it's a heater. And I can't wait to get involved in this. How is yours working out?
Really good. It's got this wonderful sort of brown sugar, molasses, toffee note going on in the flavor profile. And it does have some spiciness. And I really can't put my finger on it, but it's got that spiciness where it's like a baking spice. It's got a little bit of bite to it, some complexity, but it doesn't run over the core of the whiskey. So it still ends up being a really nice, subtle whiskey, which is exactly what I was looking for to pair with this cigar. I wanted the whiskey flavor without being too dominant. And even at 46%, you think 46%, you know, most whiskeys are bottled at 40 or 43. So to bottle at 46, it does have some oomph to it, but the strength of this whiskey is not running over the cigar. So far, so good. This is actually a really solid pairing. It makes me think that this Recluse Amadeus Connecticut Shade could probably be paired very safely with a variety of spirits, like really light whiskeys like a Glenrothes, Glenfarclas, Balvenie. Any of those would probably go really, really well. Quick story about that Tomaten, the 1993 there. I was at a Vertical. For those who aren't aware of Vertical, that's where you sit down with the representative of the distillery and they pour almost the entire range. So it was literally, and I want to say they started at the 10-year, but I might be speaking out of turn. It might have started with the 12-year. It might have been the 10-year cask strength and then 12, but I can't remember. Anyway, it was the 10, 12, 15, 17, 21, that bottle, and then the 30. And I have to say, that bottle for me was just the knockdown, drag them out winner, even among the 30. The 30 was like phenomenal, but that 20 at cask strength, I mean, forget about it. I should have bought three bottles when I bought it.
Dude, this is a heater.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hot. You get that burn down the throat big time on this. And you can, so the lines, like the drip lines, whatever, the legs.
Yeah.
That's an indication of sugar content, correct? As I get you right mid-sip there.
I'm not actually sure. I've heard the legs described a couple different ways. A lot of people describe the legs as being the sign of a well-aged whiskey. So they say that a whiskey that spent a lot of time in the cask has really long legs. So what that means is you get a line, and then the drip lines take a really long time to come down. So the whiskey itself is very viscous, but I feel like a lot of that's been romanticized, and I'm definitely not in terms of that. I mean, I've had obviously a whiskey or two in my time, but I'm not the expert to speak on whiskey legs. But I see a lot of guys talking about it, especially tastings. They'll hold it up. They'll look at sort of how the whiskey comes down the glass. And some people can even identify the origin or that particular range based on the legs. So it's a thing. I just, you know, I'm not really up on it as much as the next guy, I think.
Oh, I wish I could, like, so I wish you could, you can kind of see them creeping mm-hmm. down the sides there. But I mean, they start like up here, all the way at the top of the glass, and go straight down. Yeah. I don't normally pay attention, excuse me, to that. But they're so noticeable and so thin and so long that I felt like that had to be an indication of something. Hopefully it's an indication of something good. Anyway, the flavor on this is out of this world. Super, super sherry bomb, super spicy. A little bit of that... there's some vanilla in there too, a little bit of vanilla, and a little bit of that like stoned. We talk about that stewed stone fruit, like a stewed cherry. I almost want to say like a prunish kind of flavor, but prune has kind of
like a stewed prune. I get it. Yep,
yeah,
I agree.
You know what I'm talking about. but it's got that flavor in there. And that's one of those things that I love about things that are aged in sherry casks, because I feel like that's one of the flavors that I really get. And that's a flavor that I really love. I love that flavor in cigars as well. And but it's super strong. Like, I almost want to go put a couple drops of water in here or something just to even it out. With all that being said, it pairs pretty well with the cigar.
Wow.
It's running over the flavor a little bit. I'll be honest with that. It's running over the flavor a little bit. I'm getting much more sweetness now out of the retro. The finish of the cigar, the spice in the retro is still there, but it's muted because I feel like the spice is just overrunning it. But I feel like what you were saying about a whiskey that's on the lighter end, this is not the lighter end. This is the polar opposite of the lighter end. And had I known that this was 60% ABV, I probably would have picked something else. But surprisingly enough, the cigar stands up to it a little bit. So I'm thinking that maybe if we went back and went with that Habano that we paired a couple weeks back of the same blend, might be a bit of a different story. The pairing is okay. It's definitely highlighting the whiskey, but the cigar is holding its own is the way that I think the best way to describe it.
So because it's a live show and sometimes things happen, I've had a beer emergency, and that's all right. I've got beer all over my table, all over the floor, which is really unfortunate, but it happens. What can you do? I was going to highlight my next beer and trying to get some pictures beforehand, but that's not going to happen. So bear with me a second here, Rob, while I just move some electrical around to avoid any interesting surprises during the show.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'll vamp for a little bit. I'll freestyle. I'm not going to drop any house beats or anything, but the cigar is interesting. It's got, like we talked about, it's got a bit more oomph than you're expecting out of a Connecticut. And I think it makes it a little bit more versatile when it comes to pairing, because you start thinking, well, this is a Connecticut shade. I got to pair it with the Pilsner, which the Pilsner pairing was great. And, you know, a lighter whiskey, I think that this would stand up, as John was saying, with something from like Glenmorangie or you mentioned Glenfarclas. I've never had Glenfarclas or Glenrothes, any Glen. Would work out really, really well. Even maybe an IPA, like a lighter, fruitier IPA, not something that's overly earthy or overly danky, might be a nice pairing as well. Coffee would be a no-brainer. Rum as well, no-brainer, which I think is why we rarely ever pair with coffee or rum, because it's too easy. But I think along those lines, you could get pretty creative with some of this, or even some Belgian style beers. I think some Belgians would be great. The way that it's pairing with the spiciness of the farmhouse style, you could jump into, you know, saisons. And you know, it's funny. I almost went with a Trappist, picked up one of the Trappist ales, the Belgian ales today. I don't know why I didn't. I almost did, and that actually would have been a really nice pairing. I don't know if I would have gone with a double or a triple, but. Just something from that Belgian side would be nice. And really anything that's going to have like a Kolsch or something like that. Kolsch might even be too light, really. It's, unless you're going with a kind of a ramped up Kolsch, which I don't know if there is such a thing, but that style of ale, something crisp, something light.
I'm honestly surprised that, and I think this really speaks to the volume of how well the cigar is blended, that it can stand up to such a variety. I mean, we're putting through the cigar through quite at the pace tonight in terms of the different styles and different types and different strengths of beverages we're going with. And for the cigar to stand up to that and really still continue to have its flavor come through is really impressive, because like I said, a normal classic Connecticut, especially when we got to the whiskey, even this Amaret, which is really on the more light and delicate side, would have been absolutely blown out. And I'm actually shocked that the Tomatin 93 doesn't just run that cigar right over, because I mean that is absolutely what I would describe as a full-bodied, full-flavored. When you get into a cask-strength sherry bomb of a whiskey, that usually just takes your palate. I mean, beyond the fact that the alcohol is gonna completely shock your palate, the spices off that sherry tend to linger quite a bit between draws, or between sips, I should say, totally in cigar mind here. But this Amaret's really good. I'm just going to do a quick station break here before we get into our last beer. Remind our audience that you're tuned into Sharing Our Pairings episode 89. This is a spotlight on Recluse 2.0. That's right. This is the second show. We've already done the Recluse Amadeus Habano Lancero, and now we're doing the Recluse Amadeus Connecticut Shade, and it's going really well. I'm your host, John the Cigar Surgeon, joined as always by Robbie Rass. We're broadcast around the world picked up on the Armed Forces Radio Network. And I definitely did have a beer foul here. And the tough thing, of course, about being live is that if I was indoors, you know, I could just grab some paper towel and clean up. But instead, I have a big mess to clean up later, and such is life. And it let me down a little bit because I ended up wasting like a third of my last pairing tonight.
That's unfortunate. I'll do something, I'll ash in one of my drinks or something like that. Those are the mistakes that I make, but it happens, you know.
I remember when you ashed in that Miyagikyo, or no, it wasn't the Miyagikyo, it was the Takatsura 21.
Yeah.
That was a sad time.
I mean, there wasn't a ton left, and I mean, there's still a fair amount of this, and I'm gonna nurse on that and enjoy that maybe a little bit later tonight, because that's fantastic. It's a big, big whiskey. That's 60 ABV.
Yeah, it's a monster. I mean, even if it wasn't 60%, you get a sherry bomb that's over 43. That's a lot for your palate. I mean, it really takes your palate right over.
Yeah, that is for show. But I'm curious to see how I'm going to transition into this next beer, because this next beer is like I'm taking a left turn big time.
Yeah, and I didn't go... For my second to third pairing, I didn't make such a huge transition like you did. So I'm actually also interested to see where that goes. But I'm just shaking the can off here because it's completely covered. But this is from Oscar Blues. And nice. We do love Oscar Blues. Their 1050 still ranks as one of the best stouts I've ever had in my life. I think I've got two or three left in the fridge, and I'm kind of sitting on them. Oscar Blues, this is the – now, is it Piner or Pinner? Because it's spelled Pinner. Pinner throwback IPA, do you know?
I don't. I'd go Pinner.
Basically. Yeah, it seems like Pinner. At any rate, a little bit about Oscar Blues. We've featured them a number of times on the show, but just to remind you, they started as a brew pub in Lyons, Colorado, 1997, and they were really one of the first sort of craft breweries to start using cans. In fact, a lot of sources credit them as being the first craft brewery to bring cans back and make cans sort of cool again. And Robbie already kind of demonstrated to, quote unquote boutique breweries that are using cans. And obviously, you know, we talked about this on the show before, and we'll continue to talk about it. When we're doing a show, one of the nice things about getting a can instead of a sixer or even a bomber is that, first of all, it's price affordable. So you can pick up a can for, you know, $3, $3.50 if you're down in the States versus, you know, $4, $5 for a bomber. And it's about the right size. It's about what I want to drink for a session versus a bomber, which, you know, let's be honest, if you're drinking responsibly, I don't want to sit down and drink a bomber in one session. It's too much beer. I mean, I just, you know, beyond the calorie facts, it's a lot of alcohol. So this is about right. I've got my fancy IPA glass because, you know, Robbie has his IPA glass and I can't be different. It's got that nice hazy IPA quality. The entire deck now smells like IPA. I've got a lot of floral notes going on because
I'm sure your neighbors are thrilled.
I'm sure they're thrilled. It hasn't dripped down to the neighbors below, so I don't think they're going to hate me. I'm just sort of sitting in a pool of beer. What's nice about this IPA is it's really a sessionable IPA, and we're going to see just how sessionable it is, but it's 4.9% ABV, which is great. I mean, a lot of the IPAs I see are minimum 5.5, usually around 5.8 to 6.2, and 35 IBUs, which seems really low to me because most IPAs, I think like the lower shelf I'd see is 50.
Yeah. I mean, this Pilsner that I had was 30.
And it's a Pils.
Or maybe it was 20. But still. And you said 35?
35.
Interesting. I see that the Pinner, we're going to go Pinner. I see it all the time. It's one of their regular releases. I've never had it, though.
As Logan would say, she good. And when you nose it, there's no mistaking this is an IPA. And if you nosed it, you would not think this is 35 IBUs. Because I mean, right off the start, you get sort of that the I think it's West Coast with the floral or the tropical fruit IPA hoppy notes, and then underneath it, no mistaking, there's a little bit of piney notes. Now I don't have the what hops, you know, normally we talk about the hops and the malts. They don't have it posted on their website. You can check it out at Oscar Blues, but they don't have it posted. But there's no mistaking this is an IPA. I think the only thing I would say based on the nose is that it's not overpowering. Like a lot of really hoppy IPAs, you take a nose and it's, you know, there's no question like your nose is on fire with hoppiness. And that's a lot more subtle on this one. So I'm going to take some sips here while you talk about your third and last beverage.
So I went with a brewery that is near and dear to my heart. If you follow me anywhere, you know that I very much love everything they're doing out of Modern Times down in San Diego. I'm going with the Modern Times Blazing World. Now, the interesting thing about Modern Times is they really only have, I think, 4 or 5 core beers that are available year-round. I can tell you right now, they actually have 4. And they're year-round in cans. These are the year-round cans. They have year-round cans and year-round 22 ounces. So the 22 ounce, they have 7 year-round beers. And this one is the, like I said, the Blazing World. It's a hoppy, dank amber ale. And as you can see, definitely very amber.
Oh, definitely.
Crystal clear, not cloudy at all. Really very small head on there. It's tiny.
Sweet like little head. It's the opposite of a watermelon on a toothpick, really.
It's like an olive on a toothpick. The nose on it is really, really interesting. Because it has the nose of an amber ale, where it's malty, it's a little bit sweeter. But there is a ton of hop bitterness in here. And there's that underlying layer of danky earth. There's like a citrusy, fruity, sweetie, danky, hoppy nose. It's very, very interesting. Now, just to give some of the specs. One thing that I love about Modern Times is all the specs are right here on the can. That's everything that you need to know about it.
I love that.
It is the SRM on this, the color, it's SRM 11, or Fern Amber. It's 85 IBUs, so we jumped
Doggy.
The final gravity is 1.008. I'd be curious to see what the original gravity was. And really, you could, based on the ABV, which is 6.8%, you could reverse engineer that and find out exactly what it is. The hops that they're using are Nelson, which Nelson is pretty popular hop. Simcoe, popular as well. And Mosaic, also very popular. Malts, Turo, that's your base malt. Munich and Midnight Wheat. Midnight Wheat, you're getting some of that color. You're getting some of that mouthfeel from that as well. this beer is the stickiest of the icky. I like that.
No doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. But they've got a handful of things that are available year-round. And their year-round beers are fantastic. Fortunate Islands is a hoppy, citrusy wheat. Very good. Black House is their coffee roasty stout, which is phenomenal. And their Loma Land is a bright and rustic Saison. Not a big Saison guy, but they're pretty good as well. When you start getting into their bottled stuff, I won't wax on too much about Modern Times. I love these guys. City of the Dead, speaking of dead, like I've kicked this like a dead horse completely. The City of the Dead is their... this is a coffee stout, and they barrel age their coffee beans. They make their own coffee. And I don't know. They barrel age the beans, not the beer. But anyway, their stuff is phenomenal. I've had one beer from them that didn't blow me away, and it's just because it was the Orderville, and that's their Dank Mosaic IPA. I just don't really like very danky IPAs, so that was the only one that I didn't love. Modern Times has been around. They brewed their first batch on May 18th, 2013. Their beer was on tap for the first time on June 24th, 2018, 2013.
I heard 2013.
Okay, good. Their beer was on tap for the first time June 24th, 2013. They had their soft opening of their Loma Land Fermentorium. Great name. I almost said a bad word there. Tasting room on August 9th, 2013, and their grand opening was September 7th, 2013. And their beers are fantastic. They make they have a 30-barrel production and tasting room in Point Loma neighborhood of San Diego. And Modern Times was a utopian community that was founded in 1850. And if you go to their website, all their names of their beers have some sort of meaning and some sort of connection to that that community that was started. The brewery was founded by Jacob McKean, a beer geek and former Stone Brewing Company employee. And a longtime home brewer. The other thing that I love about these guys, and I haven't even started talking about the pairing yet, and I promise I'll move forward, but not every beer, but if you go to their year-round canned offerings, if I can get that to open back up, each one, you have the homebrew recipe.
Oh, sweet.
So I could click here, and I'm looking at the recipe for making this Blazing World. It's for a, what is this? This is a 5 gallon. That's so awesome. It's a 5 gallon batch. I need 10 pounds of pale malt two row. I need 1 pound and 6 ounces of Munich malt. Like, I know exactly how many hops I need when I do my hop additions. So I could make that this weekend if I wanted to. I think that's freaking cool, man. Because I mean, I geek out of that about that kind of thing. Anyway, this beer is very, very different than what I've been having before, and I will shut up now. So, John, you can talk about your pairing.
It's all good. Before I talk about the pairing, I just want to talk about the performance of the cigar, because I'm really at the halfway point now. I don't know where you are. So almost exactly the halfway point. And I have to say, one of the things I really commented on with the Habano, and definitely want to comment on the Connecticut shade, is that the cigar starts out as one thing, which is really tasty, but it continues to evolve. And now that it's at the halfway point, it's settled into this wonderful nuance. It's got some cocoa notes. It's got some complexity, like hints of spices in the retrohale. It's got this elegant sweetness. It's got a little bit of that grassy note that I get from Connecticut shade. But it's got a lot going on, and there's a really satisfying smoke production. When I take a draw, when I do a retrohale, there's a really satisfying smoke production, which means that I draw slower, and the cigar burns cooler, which means I'm getting a lot more flavors. Now, talking about my pairing, this is a really light IPA. It's a very sessionable IPA. You know, if you went by the nose, you would think this is just pretty standard IPA, which I think would be the wrong way to go with this cigar. I think if this was a pretty normal IPA, I think the notes would probably run over the subtleties of the cigar. As it stands, the beer itself, the cigar doesn't do a lot for the beer, but the beer does a lot for the cigar. What I mean by that is I'm getting, so the essence of IPA here, so I'm getting a little bit of piney notes, a little bit of fruity notes, a little bit of tropical fruit, and it's got a nice creamy mouthfeel, but it's all kind of dialed down. So where, you know, if you said a IPA was typically at an 8 out of 10, this is at like a 4 out of 10. So it's like 100% to me a sessionable IPA. As a result, it pairs phenomenally with a cigar because the IPA is not in any way, in fact, even maybe less than the whiskey, taking away from the cigar. So if the weather were permitting, this is exactly the kind of beer you'd want to sit out on a warm day with, have this cigar, and it wouldn't run over this cigar at all.
Yeah, when you were cleaning up your mess, that's one thing I was talking about. And I think that your IPA is right where you'd want to be in pairing with this. And it just shows some of the versatility of the cigar as far as pairing is concerned. I think you nailed it with that choice. I hope you did that on purpose. I, on the other hand, as you know, went on in a very different direction. And the pairing is actually kind of good. I'm surprised. It's bringing out more of this malty and sweetness from this Blazing World. There's still that underlying hoppy bitterness. It's bitter, man. I mean, excuse me, 85 IBUs it's no joke. And there's that underlying dankiness in there too. But the combination of that dank flavor kind of mellows out the sweetness that you get from the amber ale style sweetness. Mm. And when I say sweetness, I mean, I'm not talking about like, you know, I just bit into took a mouthful of sugar or something like that. I mean, it's relative sweetness, right? It's like we talk about sweetness in a cigar. It's not like sweet like a candy bar, but it's relatively sweet. So that sweetness here goes really, really well with the way that this cigar has transitioned in its second half here to a bit more I'm getting a bit of a rich cocoa like you were talking about. I'm getting more of a sweet cream. There's a little bit of bitterness coming off of that as well.
Mm-hmm.
A bit of that kind of peanutty sweetness, almost like a payday candy bar.
Oh yeah, good.
You know,
call.
With the caramel and the peanut in there.
Yep.
But it's not overbearing. It's just like a glimpse of.
Yeah, it's
like
very
subtle. You take a little. Somebody waves a payday in front of you without you taking a bite out of it somehow, and you just get just a whiff of it, and that's what that flavor really is, and that kind of accentuates some of the sweetness that I'm getting out of this beer. So I feel like it's actually doing more for the beer than it is for the cigar. It's a serviceable pairing. It's not something that I would seek out. This isn't the type of beer that I would normally reach for and pair. Frankly, I'd never had this beer before. I didn't realize it had 85 IBUs. I just grabbed it because I figured an amber ale might be nice, but it's hoppy and dank amber. So it's a bit of a different, a different style. One beer that, when we asked Scott on Cigar Chat recently that he would like to pair with this is a basic Sam Adams Boston Lager, which I should have done that. I don't know why I don't have any in the house. Otherwise, I would have
I actually looked in my beer cooler, and I mean, credit to Sam Adams. I normally have a Sam Adams of some style, certainly a Sam Adams lager, and I did not have any. So, yeah, I had the same thought. And when I listened to the show, I was thinking maybe grab one of those.
You know what I like to do is get those the Sam Adams samplers, mm-hmm. and they'll do it for every different season. Like now they've got their winter sampler out that I'm sure has a winter ale and a couple of different fantastic things. Might have a stout in there or something. They do stuff all over the map, which is really, really cool. So, and that always, with all those samplers always have two or three of the regular Boston Lager in there, which is a great mm-hmm. beer. My wife complains sometimes when we don't have what she calls a regular beer in the house. And that when it comes to regular beers, that's usually the regular beer that we have is the Sam Adams Boston Lager. It's a great beer. It's a reason that you can get it anywhere. Not just because, and they're not owned by InBev or anybody. They just do their own thing, and God bless them. They've been very successful. But this pairing for me was okay. On the pairing of the night for me was the Pilsner, hands down, no question. And I feel like we could do another show on this with just Belgian style ales, and you know, really find some really nice pairings.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. The first pairing of the night here really kind of set the mark. While I think the Amrit did really held its own, right out of the gate, that wit from Le Tour du Diable, the Le Divine Comedy, was fantastic. I think white, a wit ale or a pilsner is really a great place for the cigar to be. But again, I think the Amrit kind of showed that, you know, as a secondary, if you're a whiskey drinker, I definitely wouldn't go to bourbon, because bourbon I think would be just a little too spicy, a little too peppery for the cigar. But if you can get a nice, delicate, light whiskey, scotch, Japanese whiskey would be, you know, a no-brainer, because it kind of pairs with everything. This cigar has a lot of versatility, and you used that word earlier, versatility, and I think this, you know, is an indication of where the more complex and nuanced Connecticut shade blends stand up a little bit more for pairing. And kind of unfortunate or fortunate that we came out of the gate with a great pairing, but sometimes that's how it goes, and that's all right. Now, one thing to comment on, because, you know, we do our show Wednesdays. We're going to have to do a pre-record, because it turns out we're both on assignment next week. So I know we got some comments from our pumpkin show last week. I know our audience really likes the live show, and thank you very much. We do appreciate you tuning into the live show. But we are going to have to do a pre-record. So I think, just throwing it out there, maybe it's time to do the Underground Shade. Maybe we'll go Connecticut to Connecticut. Just, you know, get crazy.
Back to back, get weird with it.
Back to back.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to get back to you on that and make sure that I have one in stock.
Copy that. But we'll be back next week with a pre-record. So again, apologies if you want to participate in our football pool, which we do in the After Dark segment. Make sure to get your football picks into surgeon@cigarfederation.com, and we'll talk about the winners and the wieners in the After Dark segment. Thanks very much for all of our Armed Forces Radio Network listeners who are out there, who tune in and been entertained for this 58 minutes. We know you're out there. We know you're keeping us safe. We do appreciate it. Coming up on Thanksgiving in just a few weeks here, hope you guys have a chance to have some turkey dinner, chill out, relax, and stay safe. And as we say in Shake Our Pairings, drink better, but drink less. So yeah, I made a colossal mess on my deck, on my table. I'm going to have to clean that up later, but
Oops.
So this, of course, is our After Dark segment, which we normally don't have an introduction. So our After Dark segment, for those who are tuning in for the first time, or maybe for our people who are coming back, just a reminder, this is kind of where we just shoot the shit. It's football season, so we talk a little bit about football. I'm sure Robbie's going to want to talk a little bit about baseball. You know, it's just kind of a freewheeling. So if you're not really down with the baseball, you're not really down with the football, you're not really down for the shit talk, you know, drop off. We'll see you tomorrow night for Cigar Chat, because Robbie and Logan will be on for a cigar. Do you know who our guest is tomorrow? Just throwing it right under the bus. Yeah.
No, we have Max from Casa Fernandez.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, we haven't had Max on before. He was just recently on...
What Embargo,
but it's a different audience, different format, so...
But it was really interesting hearing him talk about Medio Tiempo tobacco. I mean, he's one of those guys in the industry who, you know, he starts talking about tobacco and like 3 hours pass and you haven't even noticed, because you're just like, you're hanging on every word. So that'll be a good show, and everyone out there will definitely want to get the questions in for that one.
Copy that. Yeah, that'll be set up for you guys to post your questions tomorrow morning. So tomorrow being Thursday, October
27th. Toy's Day.
I can't get over this Pilsner, dude. This is legit. And I'm going back and I'm reading this little thing on their bottle. Sufferfest Beer Company creates balanced, gluten-free beers that never compromise on taste or quality. established in 2015 and produced by people who care about what they put in their bodies, Sufferfest beer leaves it all on the line. I don't know what that means.
You know,
learn more about why we run, sweat, and make beer at sufferfestbeer.com.
Props to them, because I have to say, when I see something that's gluten-free, my immediate thought is more like flavor-free. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's awesome that not only do they care about, obviously, they've got a gluten intolerance. So, you know, I know that gluten intolerance has kind of been a thing, and some people have true gluten intolerance, and some people just feel like they want to be gluten-free. Nothing wrong with that. But like I said, normally when I see gluten-free, that means taste-free. And it's cool that they are really committed to providing a craft quality product that doesn't, well, they're, you know, obviously 10 ppm, that's hardly measurable for gluten, but they're still providing a quality product that people enjoy. And obviously they enjoy. So that's cool.
Yeah, I'm digging it. And I'm not one to get pumped about Pilsners, frankly. Yeah. But I'm going to go back and they come in, I think, 4 packs. I just grabbed the one can, but I'm going to pick up a 4-pack. And I like the something about the canning, and it's kind of hard to see because it's washed out from the light, but they just throw a sticker on there. I just think that's kind of cool. So it's cheaper, right? You cut some of your costs, and it makes your beer a little bit cheaper by doing something like that, because you can buy the cans in bulk, and then you just throw your own sticker on there. And you have to put the stickers on, so maybe you're paying for a little extra time, but I don't know. I think that's kind of cool. I have their IPA here in the fridge, and if we do the Underground Shade, maybe I'll bring that out, because that might be a nice pairing of their IPA. I'm guessing that their IPA is probably along the same lines as the one that you just had, but I haven't I haven't looked at it to know what the specs are.
It just dawned on me that I guess we had a couple shows ago, Claudio from Mombacho. There is a man who loves his pills. He is probably a guy that would dig that because he loves his pills. And I've never really met a lot of guys who are like super jazzed about pills. He loves his pills.
So. He does. And when we had him on the show, he went straight Pilsner.
Great Pilsner.
And you think about it, he's Italian, right? So You look at some of the – there's a lot of Italian beers actually on the market. And really when you look at European beers really in general, Pilsners, Kolsches, that type of stuff is really popular.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different – I mean, the American flavor profile is always so in your face, and it's the same way with cigars too. You try to take, you know, some Nicaraguan blends and you sell them in Europe, sometimes it's a little bit difficult to do because it's so different. I think this does a nice – this walks at a fine line where it's a Pilsner, but it satisfies that beer geek palate, if you will, with that farmhouse kind of style that it has. It's a bit of a hybrid. And I think calling it a straight Pilsner might be a little bit fudging the lines a little bit, but it's still quite good. And I'm really excited to try the IPA. And they're local too. I drink local, man. Always.
Drink local. So before we get into our recap, because we did do a pre-record last week, thanks very much for everyone who tuned into that on podcast and the quote-unquote live broadcast on Cigar Federation and YouTube. So we've got 2 weeks of football picks to catch up on. Did you want to talk about baseball? You want to...
Well, the World Series is happening right now. Indians won game one yesterday.
What score and what's their inning?
We're in the middle of game two, in the top of the fifth, and it looks like Ben Zobrist just hit a triple and Anthony Rizzo scored. Ooh. So it's 3-0 Cubbies in the top of the fifth inning of game two. If you watched game one at all, Corey Kluber was off his ass, man. That guy was dealing. He had 8 strikeouts through 3 innings.
Holy crap.
If you know a little bit about baseball, you know that you only get 3 outs per inning. Now, theoretically, you could strike out 4 or 5 guys in an inning if you have a drop third strike and the guy gets on base. Yeah. It still counts as a strikeout, but he's on base. So, yeah, there's not really like a – I don't know what the record for strikeouts is in one inning. I would guess it's 5. I mean, people strike out 4 in an inning. It happens. It probably happens a couple times a year, I would imagine. That drop third strike, you know, somebody throws a curveball in the dirt or something, it gets to the backstop and speedy guy gets on first. But it's an interesting World Series, man. Neither team has won in an awful long time, so something's going to give. And they're like I said, Cleveland took game one. Cubs look like they're on the way to taking game two, although it's only the top of the fifth. So who knows?
Yeah, a lot of game to go. But the Cubbies fans will certainly be on the edge of their seat because there was definitely some mixed feelings coming out of the gate losing one. I mean, obviously someone's got to lose, someone's got to win. So it kind of has the feeling of one of those games, one of those World Series that's kind of going to go the distance. And for me, as not really, you know, definitely a couch baseball fan, I have to say I like the World Series that go the distance. I think when there's, you know, versus a blowout, it's a lot more interesting to see it go six or seven games.
Oh, absolutely. And nobody loves a game seven more than Fox.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
ain't that a fact?
It doesn't matter who's playing. I mean, my mom will
watch. Just watch our channel, please.
My mom will watch game seven, and it doesn't even matter who's playing. She'll be into it. I have a feeling this is going to go seven games because, I mean, the Cubs are going to steal one, and it looks like they could steal one in Cleveland. I feel like Cleveland could steal one in Chicago, and you got to come back to Cleveland for game six and seven, and who knows? You know, I mean, the Cleveland Indians remind me a lot of the 2010 Giants, where they were not supposed to win. They weren't supposed to beat the Rangers, and they did. The Rangers had that power lineup, and everything. The Giants did it with pitching and defense. And the Indians got Danny Salazar back, too. They kind of snuck him on the roster the same way that the Cubs got Kyle Schwarber back. Can you believe that? This kid was 0 for 4 on the season.
Yeah.
All season. He got his first hit in the World Series.
And then he got hot.
First hit of the season in the World Series. That's unbelievable. Yep. That's awesome. I think it's great. I mean,
if you're going to get hot, that's the time of the year to get hot, right?
Well, it's not even that he had a chance to get hot. He blew out his knee in game two, I think. And that was it. 7 months, and he's been rehabbing, and God bless him. He worked his ass off to get back into the lineup. And he almost hit a home. His first hit was a double off the top of the wall. It was almost a home run. And he drove in a run today, so he's already paying dividends for a guy who hasn't played all year. But since he was on the 60-day DL, he's technically on the roster, so they can add him to their postseason roster. Baseball has a lot of rules about postseason rosters that nobody cares about, so we're going to move on. But Cleveland got Danny Salazar back, and he's kind of a stud pitcher. So it's going to be interesting to see how this whole thing plays out.
Talking just before we get into football here, just talking about this recluse Amadeus, as Scott Weeks would say, this cigar is good. It's enough to make a good dog break his chain. I feel like the cigar is still building in intensity. Like, I'm not even in the last third here, and the cigar just keeps going. Flavor wheel just keeps going. It's delicious. But I'm going to recap the last 2 weeks because we had some ups, we had some downs.
Sorry to cut you off, but 2 minutes ago I got an email from Scott. He said, great show tonight, guys. So far, he said, thanks for including Amadeus Connecticut in the pairings. I think that's just – he's a class guy.
He's a class guy all the way, 100%. Yeah, totally agreed. So week five, I felt like I was making some headway in my other pool that I'm – pick 'em pool that I'm in. Last year, I dominated, and you know, this is where I brag a little bit, because I don't normally do well in pick 'em pools. I can kind of hold my own, but then I lose. Last year, I dominated from week one all the way through week 17 and won the year. I don't think that's going to happen this year. I have not been doing well. I'm still in the running, as they say, but with 7 weeks of football behind us, I'm going to have to get pretty lucky to pull ahead. I thought I was doing really well in week five. In week six, our friend Dave, who runs Cigar Jukebox, if you haven't tuned in or subscribed to Cigar Jukebox, you're doing yourself a disservice. It's a great show, highly entertaining, lots of guests, and what Dave does is he pairs with music, which is really cool, and, you know, it's a great show. So if you haven't tuned in, tune in. But Dave was kicking our asses for 5 weeks. And he kind of had a bit of a falter, misstep in week five. And boy, did we put him down in the dirt in week six. Dave fell to six picks for the week in week six. I came out ahead with nine. And I think that was really because of the Cowboys. The Cowboys saved my bacon. We were all shocked by the Chiefs upsetter on the Raiders. We were all hot on the Raider Nation. And boy, did the Chiefs come out. And, you know, we talked about it last year. When we pick the Chiefs, they lose. When we pick against the Chiefs, they win.
They hate us.
They hate us. And I went back and listened to our After Dark segment, and I kind of feel a little responsible for what happened to the Steelers because I chose my words poorly, and I said, Roethlisberger's healthy. With a healthy Roethlisberger, there's no way the Dolphins can win that game.
Oh, you said it twice.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Steelers fans.
The commentator's jinx.
It's kind of my bad because Roethlisberger got injured. So I was thinking of the Steelers fans, and I was like, boy, that was a really dick move. So I'm going to kind of avoid talking about health matters because, obviously it's not my fault, but I still feel like a dick for saying that. The Chargers, the big Thursday night upsetter game, the Chargers just came out and just spanked the Broncos. You called that. You said that had the feeling of a trap game, and sure enough, it was a trap game. So those are the sort of two big upsetters, your 49ers. Just laid a, that was Cap's game to win. We talked about it being his Super Bowl game. It was not his Super Bowl game. So you ended the week six with 7 picks, which brought you to a total of 47 picks for the season. I had 9, which took me to 51. But Dave, damn it, still ahead with 54 picks. So moving on to week 7, not a lot of surprises. I don't know why I picked the Rams in London, because on my pick and pool, I picked the Giants. And I don't know what was going on. We all picked the Chiefs. I think after the performance in week 6, we kind of saw that coming. The Jets, of course, sucked. Interestingly enough, I totally screwed up my pick. So just to show how much of a suffering Jets fan, I put the Jets as losing in week 7.
They won.
So, whoops, my bad. So that actually changes the pick count, but oh, no, pardon me. I see what happened. What happened was we all picked against them, and then they ended up winning the game. And some weird – if you want to have a good laugh, look up Fitzpatrick cycle of football, because the guy comes into a team, the lead quarterback gets injured and taken out, and then Fitzpatrick starts, and then he sucks, and then the quarterback comes back, and then he's good for a while, and then he gets injured. And anyways, that cycle continues, because now Geno first came back, friggin' torn ACL. Like, brutal. Patriots, of course, laid a pounding on the Steelers. You kind of got sucked into that one. The Sunday night game was just a complete poo-poo show. We kind of called that a little bit. We kind of said it was either going to be a high-scoring affair or just a really low-scoring affair. And God, was that ever a low-scoring affair. I mean, that was the worst football I've seen in a long time. Ended up in a tie, which is even worse. Just terrible. So I ended the week with 9 picks, which brings me to a total of 60 overall. You're still trailing, my friend, I'm afraid. 7 picks at 54 for the year. And damn it, Dave, if he didn't win that week at 10 picks, Dave still got a comfortable lead. 64 picks overall. We got to catch him, man. We can't let the Australians beat us. We just can't.
Copy that, man. Although, wasn't today like Australia Day or something?
Boy, if it was, recently. I'm embarrassed. I didn't say anything.
It might have been yesterday. There was something on Facebook that says, hey, you have a couple of friends who live in Australia, and it's this day for them. So whatever day it was, I hope you guys had a good day.
There you go.
I don't know what the holiday was, but I've never been to Australia. My wife has, but I've never been.
I definitely want to go.
It's like a 25-hour flight from where I am. So
all I know is everything there wants to kill me. So
yeah, they've got some aggressive stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Happening there. I'm surprised that you said I got 7 right. That I don't know how many games are there every week.
It shifts. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 15. That's not a good week. 7 out of 15.
Oh, it's a little bit less than 500, but yeah, no, it's yeah. I think I picked the 49ers to win every week too, which is just stupid.
Yeah, I think you just embraced it. What can you do?
I'm picking against them this week. Oh, wait, they're not playing.
They're not playing. So you are kind of, in essence, picking against them.
Yeah, they still lose.
So,
and Alan, you need to stop messaging me about the Cubs. I understand.
Yeah, stop messaging. It's if you're going to heat somebody up about your team winning, you're going to get lit up when your team's losing. And, bro, you don't want to be on the receiving end of that.
Yeah, I mean, the Cubs are – Kyle Schwarber, just fresh off the 7-month DL – drove in another run, so it's 4-0 now, as far as I can tell, unless MLB might be a little bit slow. But anyway, let's get into these picks.
Let's get into it. So we kick it off with the Thursday night game. Jacksonville Jaguars on the road against the Tennessee Titans, who have performed really well. They kind of started out of the gate really, really not very well, but last week kind of had a bit of a misstep against the Colts, which was kind of disappointing. I kind of figured they'd take that game. But the week before, they came out dominant, although, you know, that wasn't much of a game. So really, not much of a Thursday night game, Jags versus Titans. What do you, what's your take on that one?
I got to go Titans on that one. It looks like Mariota and Marcus Mariota, right? That's how you say his name.
Yeah.
It looks like he's starting to figure it out. And I'm basing that mainly on, I'm not watching the tape, but I'm basing that obviously by my picks. I'm not watching the tape. I'm basing that just on his fantasy football scores, which doesn't necessarily equate to great play on the field. But he's scoring a ton of points in the fantasy league. So he must be doing something right. And I feel like they're trending maybe in the right direction. The Jaguars are still the Jaguars.
There you go. So you're going Titans, I'm going Titans. I'm not foolish enough to take the Jags. Titans at home, that's going to be a good game. Now, one of the games I don't know what to make of this game, the Washington Redskins on the road to face the Cincinnati Bengals at home. And, you know, these are two teams which, to me, are wild cards because I pick the Bengals to win, they lose, and then I pick the Redskins to win or pick against them and they win. So I don't know how to call that game because I feel like these teams are really evenly matched. I'm really at a loss on this one.
I'm sorry, I was going to take a picture here. What's the game again?
Paying attention once again. It's the Redskins versus the Bengals. Bengals being at home. This is the London game at 9:30 Eastern in the morning.
I did it again. What are they? The Bengals and the who?
You're terrible.
And the Redskins?
So it's in London. It's the Redskins versus the Bengals in London.
Oh, that's right. I'll take the Bengals. Come on.
You know what? I'm going to make a foolish decision, and I'm going to take the Redskins. I don't know why, but I guess just to make it interesting, I'm going to go Redskins. Next up, and I don't think there needs to be a lot of commentary, Patriots on the road facing the Bills at home.
Yeah, that sounds like redemption, yeah?
I mean, I think we talked about it last week and the week before. I don't see the Patriots losing another game this year.
Yeah,
even if
it's story.
The Bills, I just can't see it.
I'm taking the Pats. Moving on.
Now, here's a game where I don't know what to make of. Arizona Cardinals facing the Panthers at home. Now, I haven't been following whether, I think, so Cam is back.
Yeah, the Cardinals, man, like their defense looks really, really stout. But their offense looks crappy.
Just terrible.
Except for their
against
running
the
back, David Johnson, is that the running back who I drafted? So he scores like a ton of points every week. He's like their entire offense.
Yeah.
And where is it in St. Louis? Or is it in Arizona?
It's in Carolina.
It's in Carolina. Ooh, that's a tough one.
That's a tough one.
It sounds low scoring. Like, I mean, yeah, we talked about the their game last week, the tie. Man, that's a tough game.
Yeah,
that's a tough game. In a situation like that, I usually go with the home team. So I'm going to take Carolina.
I'm also going to take Carolina because I've been getting spanked at home team wins. Now, no one cares about this game, probably including me, but it's a tough pick for me. Jets on the road after somehow beating the Ravens, which normally does not happen, especially in the years where the Steelers and the Ravens play the Jets in the same year. The Jets come out and lose against both teams, but they're facing the Browns. The Browns are at home, Jets on the road.
Right. The doo-doo bowl of the week, huh? Who's the quarterback for the Jets now? Is it Fitzmagic again?
It's back to Fitzmagic because Geno's out with an ACL.
Okay, so we go by the thing. Yeah. He was bad, and now somebody's got hurt, and then he's going to be good again, right?
That's how the cycle's supposed to go.
Boom.
So the Jets should come out and win this game like 26-13 or 26-17.
The only thing that would be worse, I think, would be the 49ers versus the Browns.
Hmm.
Because somebody has to win, and it's probably just going to be by default. But yeah, I'll go with the Jets in this one.
I'm also going to go with the Jets. Against my better wishes, I'm going to go with the Jets as well. Detroit Lions on the road facing the Houston Texans at home. Banged up Houston Texans.
The Texans just, I mean, they spent a lot of money on Brock Osweiler for some reason, and that doesn't seem to be working out too well. And, yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know.
I'm going Lions if that helps.
Yeah, well, the Lions are like 4 points from being undefeated or some crap like that. Or at least they were like a couple weeks ago when he did this. Yeah, I'll probably go with the Lions on that one too.
Roger that. Kansas City Chiefs on the road. Again, another tough game for me to pick with Kansas because they're facing off against the Indianapolis Colts at home. But Indianapolis, again, another team that's just been all over the board. They win, but, you know, they lose against the Texans, but then they win against the Titans. I have no idea what to make of this team. They're just so hot and cold. And Kansas, when they're hot with Smith, I mean, when he lights it up, when he gets his offense heated up, I mean, they're unstoppable. But they're on the road. They're not at Arrowhead. So I don't know.
That feels like a KC win to me.
It feels like a KC win to me, too, and maybe we should just call it a KC win and move on.
Which means that the Colts are probably going to win.
Smart money says Colts. Seahawks on the road, and I hate the Seahawks, and you hate the Seahawks. And, you know, what a crappy game last week. But and it's going to be a short week for them, but they're on the road, and they face the Saints. Saints are at home.
Yeah, this is an interesting game, man, because the Saints are kind of – they keep – making you think they're going to get good, and then they don't.
Yeah.
I mean, what are they, like 2-5?
Let's have a look here. I'll pull up the NFL standings, take a look. New Orleans Saints are sitting at 2-4. And somehow the Seahawks are at 4-1, which, well, 4-1-1, but you wouldn't think they are because they've just been playing shitty. Shitty football.
But good teams find a way to win.
That's true.
Right? I mean, I didn't watch that game last week. It tied 6-6, but
terrible. So bad.
I would guess that the Saints probably scored the final point.
I'd just like to comment that Randy Moss can be a better field goal kicker. He kicked two field goals at the same distance that they missed, and he did it in a suit and he did it in dress shoes.
Awesome. But so, he did it with nobody rushing him.
That's also
in a very controlled environment. So there's that. I mean, give me that. I can make that. And I've got a decent leg, a soccer style kicker. Oh yeah,
really?
soccer style for sure. A little Ray Finkel action, but I don't know, man. I feel like the Saints should win, but the Seahawks will.
All right, so you going Seahawks?
Yeah,
I'm going Saints. Now here's a game which could be really interesting to watch because the Raiders have been up, the Raiders have been down. Raiders on the road. Facing off against the Bucks. Bucks are at home. Bucks coming off a big win.
Doesn't matter.
I'm going Raider Nation.
Yeah.
I'll
take the Raiders in that one, too. The 49ers, their defense is atrocious. They're making every offense look great.
Yeah.
Especially a run game. Oh, God. If you're in a fantasy football league, you want the running back going against the 49ers because they cannot stop the run. And you also want the quarterback and the wide receivers, too, because they can't stop that. And you may as well get the tight end because what the hell.
Just get everybody in there.
Just get everybody. Yeah, they're terrible. And I think the Raiders are a good football team. I'll go with the Raiders. Bounce back.
The Raiders. Now, this could actually be an interesting game. The San Diego Chargers going to Mile High to face off against the Broncos. Now, you talk about, you know, we just came off a really tough matchup for the Broncos and a tough matchup for the Chargers. This is a tough matchup. Both of these teams play tough football. But I feel like the wild card here is the Broncos being at home, which is always the tough matchup. Broncos at home are like the Patriots at home. It's a tough, tough team to beat at home.
Yeah, it doesn't matter who their quarterback is either sometimes.
Sometimes. Most times.
Yeah, I mean, you need a high-powered offense and a good defense, I think, to beat the Broncos at this point because their defense is tough. So you need to be able to squeak out a few points. And was it the – I heard – no, that was college football. Never mind. There was a stat where it was like one college football team has they've scored a defensive touchdown in 7 straight weeks.
That's incredible.
That's unbelievable. I can't remember who it was. It might have been Alabama or something like that. But anyway, I digress. I feel like that's a Broncos win. I feel like it's going to be a dirty, ugly football game, like an NFC North kind of football game.
Yeah.
And the Broncos are going to win.
Yeah, I'm not foolish enough to try and take the Broncos and pick against the Broncos when they're home. So we're not splitting that one. Now, one of the ones we might split is Aaron Rodgers and his Packers on the road facing the Falcons at home. Now, both of these teams are kind of evenly matched in their standings for the year. Falcons sitting at the top, barely hanging on the top of their division, 4-3. Packers 1 game back from the Vikings, 4-2. but neither team has really impressed me this season. I mean, they're barely above 0.5.
Yeah, it's tough, man. I feel like both of these teams should be a lot better. I felt this way about the Falcons for a few years. They should just be a lot better than they are. I feel like at home, if it's a coin flip, which this kind of feels like it is, I'm going to take the home team, so I'll go with the Falcons.
That's interesting because normally I would go with the Falcons, but their point against is horrible. So Green Bay Packers a little bit tighter. So I'm going to go Packers. So we're going to split the week. You're going Falcons. I'm going Packers. Now we finally get to some interesting divisional matchups here. Philadelphia Eagles on the road. Dallas Cowboys at home with Dak still at center. Under center.
Yeah. Yeah.
For now.
Playing center. That'd be tough. Yeah, they keep doing it. And, I mean, Cowboys fans are more insufferable than Cubs fans.
Oh, yeah.
Not by much, but they are. God, that's a tough one. I don't know what to make of the Eagles, frankly. I think they're finding ways to win. I feel like Dallas might be a better team.
They lose against the Redskins, and then they come out and beat the Vikings. Like, yeah. The Vikings were undefeated and not even close to losing.
Divisional matchup, dog.
It's tough, man. Those divisional matchups, unless you're, like, I find that unless you're, like, living and breathing divisional matchups, I mean, you know, the Eagles and Vikings are in different divisions, but divisional matchups, they're just so hard to call because, like, the Eagles could be 0-6 and the Dallas Cowboys could be at 6-0. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's a divisional matchup. All that's out of the gate. Like, I don't know, man.
I'm going Cowboys.
I'm going to wear my Whitten jersey for that game, and I'm going for the Cowboys as well.
Nice.
Whitten. Now, we kind of went through that very quick because a lot of teams on bye, you're very thankful if you got a bye in week 8. Now, this is the game that could be an interesting Monday night game if both of these teams come out and play. I don't really care about either of these teams, but Monday night game, Minnesota Vikings – Chicago Bears, Minnesota Vikings. You talk about divisional matchups. 5-1 had their first defeat last week, which was just—it was embarrassing. It probably shouldn't happen. Chicago Bears. You know, you can give the Bears Cubs fans out there a bit of a ribbing because their team sucks. They're 1-6. They suck. They're 0-4 on the road, but they're at home. And you know, this is really the game. You know, you start getting into the divisional matchups. It's going to kind of decide the where the season goes. So you know this is the kind of game where the Bears want to stick it to the Vikings and throw them off. I don't know what to think about that one.
No, I know exactly what to think about it. The Vikings are going to win.
Vikings going to win?
Mm-hmm.
Vikings. I can't pick against them either. I mean, no, they lost against the Eagles, but there's no way a 5-1 team and a 1-6 team, I'm going to take the 1-6 team. No way.
Yeah, I mean, something's got to give in both of those records because nobody thought the Vikings were going to be that good, and mm-hmm. nobody thought the Bears were going to be this bad. Mm-hmm. So something has to give there, so it could be a bit of a trap game. But to me, I mean, I need to make up ground, so I should probably take the Bears, but I'm going to take the Vikings.
Yeah, you're not that silly. You've taken the 49ers enough weeks.
Copy that.
So that's it for our football picks for week 8. And if you want to get involved in that, you got to get me your picks before Thursday. That's right, before Thursday. If it's after Thursday, sucks to be you. So Dave Burke, I'm talking to you, brother. Get your picks in because we're looking to take you down. We'll be back tomorrow night, Cigar Chat, with Max Fernandez from Casa Fernandez. That'll be a really cool show. You want to check that out. And again, we're going to have a pre-record sharing our pairings next week. Sorry, guys, we couldn't do it live. We're on assignment. Life takes priority, but we're going to have a good show. We're going to try and make it interesting. So check that out at his regular scheduled time next Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard. Thanks for all of our live listeners and all of our podcast listeners and all of our Armed Forces Radio Network listeners who dropped off about 30 minutes ago. As I was saying, Shanger Pranks, drink better, but drink less.